Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer at How Stuff Works and I love all things tech. And you are listening to a classic episode of Tech Stuff. This one is about the sad tale of Hitchbot, a robot designed to hitchhike across North America, and how it journeyed across Canada and then met a rather untimely end in the United States. Spoiler alert. And this episode features guest host Scott Benjamin, who joins us to talk about Hitchbot and the somewhat tragic comedic tale. I hope you enjoy this classic episode. On July 27th, 2014, a hitchhiker began a historic journey from Halifax, Nova Scotia, to get to Victoria, British Columbia, on the other side of Canada. We're talking crossing the entire width of Canada. And if you were to do that on the most efficient route possible, if you got to choose the route, that would be at minimum around 3,644 miles or 5,864 kilometers. However, hitchhikers rarely have the ability to call exactly what route needs to be taken. They are at the mercy of the drivers that pick them up.
Sure. I'm headed west.
Exactly. Take me as far as you're going.
And not that I condone hitchhiking or anything like that. This is kind of dangerous, right?
It can be, and we will definitely get into some danger territory at part of this conversation. Well, the full trip took closer to 10,000 kilometers, or about 6,200 miles.
Wow.
And here's the weird part. The hitchhiker was a robot.
Ah, that is weird.
Yeah, not a person. I've never picked up a hitchhiker. In fact, for a long time, I had never even seen one. Saw a lot in Hawaii. Surfer culture is still going strong.
Yeah, there's certain parts of the United States that you can expect to see more hitchhikers than other parts.
Right.
And Hawaii, I guess, would be one of those places. I've been there too, and I know exactly what you're talking about. I think I've seen more hitchhikers in Hawaii standing at bus stops attempting to hitch a ride, just hoping to catch a ride before that bus shows up. You know, it's like one or the other. Eventually that bus will come. But if, you know, in the meantime, if I can just get a free ride down the road, that's what I'll do.
I've just seen lots and lots of surfers trying to get to the beach.
Trying to catch that next wave,
man. That's right, man. You can't, the waves wait for no one. And so we're talking about Hitchbot, which a lot of you have probably heard about. Hitchbot first made the news in 2014 during this historic attempt to get a robot to hitchhike across all of Canada.
Successful.
It was successful. So spoiler alert there. It then went on to do this again in Germany. It went all over Germany, and it also took a little vacation in the Netherlands.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally there was an attempt for this robot to hitchhike its way across the United States, which was cut short, just like the robot.
This all sounds so nice. What could possibly go wrong?
So you might be wondering, Ari, I've heard about this. What actually is going on? The first thing I want to say is, while we're talking about a hitchhiking robot, honestly, if I were to describe this, I would not have used the word robot.
Yeah, they're using the term very loosely, I think, here.
I think it's because the form factor makes it look sort of like a robot. And it definitely had the benefit of having like a light display that made a very simple smiley face. So you had kind of a head that you could identify. But really, we're really talking about a hitchhiking computer. It's just a hitchhiking computer that was in a more or less static robot body.
It's simple, but they found a way to anthropomorphize this thing.
Yeah.
To the point where people look at it and said, oh, that's kind of cute.
Yeah, because it has a torso. It's got arms and legs. The arms and legs don't move. The torso is static. Torso's a bucket. literally.
A bucket, yeah.
Literally a bucket. It does have solar panels that are arranged on the outside of the bucket. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the ways that the robot gets electricity. The other is that it will ask people to plug it into the a lighter socket in a car.
Sure. Yeah. It's only about 3 feet tall, so it's very small.
Yeah.
It's waterproof, which is kind of surprising. It's waterproof, but it is.
Well, and also, it wears waterproof boots. Every single article, without fail, talks about the fact that it wears wellies.
Okay.
It's Wellingtons.
It's a brand name boot.
Yeah.
Okay. It's like a rubber boot.
Named after the Duke of Wellington.
Oh. Well, its arms are pool noodles.
Yes, exactly.
So, you know, it's not like they went to great lengths to try to make this thing look human or anything like that, but it does have arms and legs. It does have a face, as you mentioned. It has, it almost looks like a Tupperware container on the top. It looks like a hat.
Yep.
A beret or something like that.
That's designed to actually protect the electronics, the tablet computer that is running the software that the robot used.
Likely part of the waterproofing overall, I guess.
And, sure.
It's GPS equipped. The thing weighs about 25 pounds total, so it's not that heavy, really.
Right.
Has its own built-in seat that, it's like a car seat almost it is a car seat from a kid's, car seat
mm-hmm.
that you can then put in your car and buckle in so it's secure when it's in there. It's not going to fly around the vehicle loose, if something were to happen.
Right. And its legs are not powered. They are static. So the way that you would set this up when you are done carrying it, as far as you want to carry it, is the seat also has essentially a lever that can, fold down into a tripod-like position. So, the two legs act as two of the legs of the tripod. This lever acts as the third. And if you were to pick it up, you could fold that arm back up against the seat. So that would allow you to put it into your vehicle and secure the car seat there.
And that's if you were in an area that you wanted to set it up on the side of the road that was, like a field or something where there's nowhere for it to sit, like on a bench or maybe on a wall or something like that.
Right. And, like I said, it was running on essentially a tablet PC that if you looked at all the equipment, according to the website, it cost about $1,000, maybe a little less. And that was a calculated decision. They wanted they being the team behind this, and I'll talk about them in a second, wanted the robot to be inexpensive enough where it would not be an obvious target for someone to just steal the components out of it. They wanted it to be, accessible. They wanted it to be cute. They wanted it to be something that people would want to interact with and to have enough of an ability to have interactions, including holding a conversation, sort of.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. We're being real generous with the term conversation.
Well, that's one thing that you and I talked about off air is that every conversation we've ever seen with this, you know, that between a human and Hitchbot, it was awkward,
yes,
to say the least. I mean, it was it kind of picked up on what the human was saying, but not entirely. It didn't quite get the gist of the conversation, and it would respond in an awkward way.
Yeah, it had a microphone so it could pick up on what people were saying, and a speaker so it could then return and communicate back.
And a big problem with that was probably the vast array of dialects that it was dealing with.
Right. And just the fact that our spoken language is incredibly plastic and adaptive, and there are so many different ways to say the same thing that it can be difficult for, you know, it's like a non-native speaker of any language. You might be taught how to say or ask for something a very specific way. And that specific way is still correct. It's not incorrect, but it's just one way to say that, to express that thought. And in most languages, there are lots of different ways to express the same thought. And you're familiar with one of them. So if anyone comes up to you and uses a different one, you could be completely confused, even though you know one way of saying it that you understand. All these other ways don't. Same thing with computers. If you train a computer using machine learning on what certain phrases mean, that's great. The computer might be able to identify that. But if someone were to ask for the same sort of thing, but word it slightly differently, that could be enough to throw a computer off.
Mm-hmm.
Because these are subtle things that we humans can intuitively grasp, but computers lack intuition.
And there's not only the word problem, there's also the way that it's said. So the regions, the zones, like, mm-hmm. you know, here in the South, people talk different than they do in the Pacific or the Pacific Northwest.
That's what I've heard.
Or the Northeast, or, you know, the people in the Southwest.
The Northeast talk faster than I can hear.
Yeah. So it's different. It's different. Not only, you know, just the different languages. Like, of course, this thing had to learn German, had to learn, Dutch, I guess.
Had to know French to get through all of Canada.
Sure, yeah, exactly right. And, of course, English and, you know, and not only that, but the different dialects along the way.
Sure. Yeah, so lots of challenges here, but the whole goal was not, the goal really, I don't think, was to have a robot hitchhike from one end of Canada to another. That was sort of the face of this project. The actual goal was more of an artistic expression as well as an experiment in robot-human interactions.
Yeah, because the thing could have been picked up right at the very first day,
yeah,
and driven all the way across by one person, you know, in a long-haul truck or something. And what would be the adventure in that? What would be the fun? The idea was that this relies on human interaction and human kindness to get mm-hmm. this thing from one place to the next, kind of to take care of this thing. And along the way, have kind of a checklist of things that they wanted to do. Now, I don't know if the Canadian trip had a checklist. I don't think it did.
Yeah.
The USA trip did have a checklist, which was started. But the Canadian trip, you know, just for instance, you know, it took 26 days to get across, you know, the entire nation there. But it did things like attend a wedding. It was dancing in Saskatchewan. It met some of the Canadian's First Nations people, some of the Aboriginal people that were native to Canada. And it did all kinds of things. I mean, it went to, you know, parks. It went to scenic locations. And all the time it was snapping photographs because it was programmed to take a photo every 20 minutes. Is that right?
And it could tweet out that information. So its interactions were doubled in that it could interact in person to people who are around it and actually attempt to have a conversation and interject. In fact, I read one report of people who had picked up the robot and they said, yeah, it was weird. There were three of us in the car plus the robot, and the three of us be talking and the robot would interject and interrupt us and often say something that is completely not connected to any of the rest of the conversation. And I thought, I've ridden in cars with people like that.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, just someone just pipes up with a total non sequitur, and you think, are we in a car with a crazy person?
Yeah, like, what's that have to do with the price of eggs in China?
Yeah, something along those lines.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that was definitely part of it. I think there was certainly an element of let's see how humans treat robots, and also let's see how we can design a robot that from the get-go is meant to interact with humans. Because one of the things we're starting to see increasingly in technology is the robotic sphere and the human sphere colliding. Like and by design, we want robots in our lives. People have named their Roombas, for example. They have given their Roombas, they've imprinted upon them this idea of a personality.
That's a big mistake.
Yeah.
When something happens to that Roomba, you know how sad you're going to be?
Well, I'd be sad to be out, $250.
Well, that's another thing, too. There's that side. But, if something happens to Fred.
Yeah, don't name your Roomba, right? But that's true. A lot of people do name these robots. People get emotionally invested in these machines. And so there is this growing field of research of human-robotic interactions. How can we, one, capitalize on this need for humans to have an emotional attachment to these otherwise emotionless beings, mm-hmm. these beings that lack a consciousness, lack emotions. How can we capitalize on that so that the interactions are useful and meaningful in some way? Even if it's only meaningful for the human, if it's impossible for it to be meaningful for the robot, that's okay if it's still meaningful for the human. Or how do we design robots that are specifically meant to not evoke that reaction because it would be just, another distraction from whatever the robot is supposed to do?
Sure.
Or it may be that whatever the robot is supposed to do is inherently dangerous and should not, you don't want to encourage human interaction. If a robot is meant to do something like dig into rubble, you don't want people to, worry about the robot. The whole reason the robot's digging into rubble in the first place is likely to look for survivors in the fallout of a building collapse or something.
Sure.
Or
just to prevent having to have a human do the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And that's really, the way that a lot of robotics experts see robots really taking off, at least in the near future, is they'll be used to do jobs that are either too dirty, dull, or dangerous for humans. So jobs that are incredibly repetitive and don't require much thought, robots are perfect for that. Also, robots don't sustain like repetitive injuries. You do have to continuously maintain them. You can't just expect them to work forever, but they don't get carpal tunnel syndrome, for example.
Unless they can fix themselves.
Right. And we will get to that point eventually. And dangerous, obviously, you don't want, you would want to be able to use a robot in a dangerous situation so that you're not putting a human life at risk.
Yeah. But with the goal of being able to use it again and again and again.
Right. So, but those robots probably don't need to have a lot of human interactivity. They're designed to do something that they're replacing a human, not interacting with a human. But at the same time, we are seeing this growing industry of robots that are designed to be around us in our daily lives, either as a telepresence-style robot where the robot is standing in as a surrogate for an actual person, and you might have like an iPad or something like that as a head where someone can Skype in. And this is always creepy whenever I see it done anywhere, but I keep being told it's the way of the future. I have never actually interacted directly with one in an official capacity, but I've seen them at CES.
Now, I'm going to make a reference to something that I have no personal interaction with.
Sure.
This at all. I believe my wife was telling me about a movie recently called Her.
Yes.
And it was a man who fell in love with the operating system.
Yes.
And the voice.
Yeah.
That operating system had. Now, I can see something like that. And let's say you get a refrigerator, mm-hmm. and refrigerators have screens on them now. Ours does here at How Stuff Works, and it's got a screen, but it doesn't talk to us.
Yeah.
But it does have a screen. You can interact, and there's a lot of different things you can do with that screen.
Including putting a wacky background image on it, as someone did when they put in the symbol for the evil organization from Lost.
I could see if it was talking to you every day and it had a likable voice, something that you felt comfortable interacting with,
mm-hmm.
I could see somebody saying, well, I'd be sad to get rid of that refrigerator in 5 years.
Well, especially if you would come home after a long day and your refrigerator says, hi, would you like a frosty adult beverage? I mean, you're going to have a bond with that machine.
Immediately.
Yeah. So, but there is this whole discipline that's coming up. Like, how do we define these interactions? How do we shape them? And a lot of it means you have to do study on both sides. You have to do a study on the robot side, like what works and what doesn't. And you actually have to study human psychology. How do humans respond to robots? And at what point do humans end up treating robots as if they are alive, as if they're living creatures? And for a while, people were thinking, well, the robot's going to need to look like something biological already. Like, it's going to have to be like a robot dog or a robot, you know, android type person.
Yeah, almost like a crash test dummy where it looks like a human, but yeah. Yeah, you can tell it's not a real human.
And it turns out that's not necessarily true, because as we've already said, people have been naming their Roombas. People get emotionally invested. It turns out that we are, if it looks animate, if it appears to behave based upon its own decisions, whether it's true or not, if it looks like it's doing that, we start to kind of, in our minds, give it these qualities.
Scott and I have a lot more to talk about in this classic Tech Stuff episode, but first let's take a quick break to thank our sponsor.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So a lot of this really was studying that, like this idea of the way people and machines are interacting and how that is becoming defined over time and what we might need to think about in that respect. And also just kind of is a happy story about how people find joy in a silly, I mean, really, you get down to it. It's a silly robot.
Yeah.
Not a bad robot. It's a silly robot. And the experience of discovery and sharing that with other people, that was a big part of this project too. And it was really successful for 3 out of the 4 big things that it did. The one that wasn't so successful in was the United States. So, really quickly before we get into the US stuff, I was going to talk about some of the folks who designed and came up with this idea. The two leads who first came up with the concept for Hitchbot were David Harris Smith and Frauke Zeller. And I probably am
mispronouncing Mrs. Zeller's
name. I've heard
name.
It Fracca.
Fracca?
Yeah, I've heard
All
of
right. Fracca.
Fracca
Zeller. Mm-hmm. It's a name that I was not familiar with. Totally new for me.
Mm-hmm. And they're out of Port Credit, Ontario.
Yes. And, Smith is assistant professor at McMaster University in the Department of Communication Studies. Zeller is an assistant professor in the School of Professional Communication at Ryerson University.
Ah, communications professors. Now this makes perfect sense because they're fishing for the way people interact with this. They want to find out exactly how people respond to this, how it responds to them.
Mm-hmm.
This interaction is really, really interesting for these people in particular, I'm sure.
Right. And Zeller, she got her PhD. Her thesis was on human-robot interaction.
Oh, well, this is it then.
Yeah. And they were joined by a lot of other people. I've just got a couple of names I'll mention, but the team itself is quite large. You can actually read up on all of them. On the website, it's funny because the way the website is written, it's written from Hitchbot's perspective.
Yeah.
So it's Hitchbot saying, oh, this is the person who helped me learn how to talk.
Yeah,
and
this,
it's very cute.
This is the person that takes care of my electronics on a daily basis. And I think there are about 14 or 15 people on that team. It's a big team.
It is a large team.
Not just the two leads here.
So. Right. So you've got people like Colin Gadigich. Or Gadgetch, who is a developer of Hitchbot, and he's also a McMaster University student. He helped design and test Hitchbot to make sure it would be able to withstand the various environments that it would encounter. Keep in mind, this was summer in Canada, so it wasn't going to have to deal with a Canadian winter, thank
Beautiful.
Goodness.
Beautiful. Loves Canadian summer.
Yeah, it's a little bit different from the Atlanta summers.
Yes.
Slightly less warm and humid.
It's about 60 degrees cooler.
Fahrenheit, that is. Not Celsius. That would be pretty incredible. So then you had Davin Bigelow, who was an undergraduate student at McMaster, who worked on the conversational skills of this robot. Karen Vielberth Fish, who was another person who worked on Hitchbot's language skills. Dominic Kalkinen, who was an undergraduate student at McMaster, whose job was to monitor Hitchbot's status and make sure the robot was okay. So, again, the robot was fitted with GPS and 3G capability to essentially report back home saying, here's where I'm at
sure.
at any given time.
And every 20 minutes, he's getting a photograph sent from this robot to him to kind of update the status, where he is right now.
Yeah. And then there was the big brother robot to Hitchbot, CultureBot, K-U-L-T-U-R-Bot.
CultureBot.
Yeah, this was a robot that preceded Hitchbot. This was a different human-robot interaction experiment.
Sure.
CultureBot's job was to attend artistic exhibitions, take images of what was going on, tweet them, and critique them. It was a robotic art critic.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. Wait, so it would actually do the critique on the fly there, like right there at the event.
That's how it was described, but I didn't read enough into it to find out how this actually worked. Like, I don't know if it was capable of stringing together any words just based upon what it was seeing. I don't know if it had human intervention where the human was the one actually providing the caption.
Huh.
I don't know the answer to that.
Fascinating.
But I do know that that was essentially another project that was taken, that was being performed by much of the same team. And kind of the Hitchbot was kind of the next step, not directly connected. It was just one of those ideas that Smith and Zeller came up with that, they thought was a really interesting concept. So after going through Canada, they went to Germany. It had a lot of adventures in Germany, went to castles, went to another wedding. There's a great picture of a bride giving Hitchbot a little kiss.
Oh, that's just adorable.
Yeah. And lots of stories of people. All of Hitchbot's journeys, by the way, are chronicled on the website. There are blog posts that tell what happened on each day. Some of them also have embedded videos of the stuff that went on and also photographs. It's very cute. Then, after Germany, it went to the Netherlands for a brief while in the summer, early summer of 2015.
Yeah, for a bunch of activities and events that I cannot pronounce.
Yes, I'm not even going to attempt.
No, a series of festivals with unpronounceable names.
And then, at least for the American tongue. And then, it moved over to the good old US of A.
Yeah, started in Boston, right? It was gonna go
Boston,
from, yeah. gonna go from Boston to San Francisco.
Yes.
That was the goal.
That was the goal, and it also had a bucket list, which is appropriate since it was a bucket.
I have the bucket list in front of me
right.
now. The bucket list has a couple of check marks on it. Now, one check mark was To do the wave at a sports game anywhere, didn't matter where it was, to do that. The other one was to see the lights in Times Square, of course, New York City.
Yes.
And there were others. There was other stuff along the way, and I'll just mention a few of these because there's probably, again, 15, 20 different things.
I'm guessing here. Grand Canyon has to be on there.
Let's see, Grand Canyon. You know, I'll have to check it out. Yes, it is. See the jaw-dropping views of the Grand Canyon. That is one. Yes, in Arizona. Pose with the Lincoln statue in D.C. was another one. Tan at Myrtle Beach. Experience the magic of Walt Disney World in Florida.
So it was going to need to actually go south along the eastern seaboard. I mean, for people who are not from the United States and aren't familiar with our geography, if you were going Boston to San Francisco, you would essentially be setting your sights west.
Yeah, just due west. Just go.
Yeah, just go west and just keep on adjusting your journey in order for you to get to California.
Yeah, exactly.
But with this list, it means that you first would need to go south, because you would have to go south from Boston to get to New York City, but also to D.C. and to Florida.
And then this goes all over the place. I mean, all over the Midwest. So there are things to do in Illinois, like explore the Cloud Gate in Millennium Park,
mm-hmm.
Stand under the Gateway Arch in Missouri, just all kinds of things like this. And again, it's a relatively long list, and with many different states, many different activities.
Mm-hmm.
And Hitchbot checked off two items on that list.
Yeah. And the reason that only two items were checked off is that Hitchbot met an untimely demise at the hands of a vandal.
Maliciously murdered.
Yes, decapitated.
Yeah, can you say murdered when it's a robot?
Disassembled? Yeah, that's what Johnny Five was scared about. No disassembled Johnny Five. So I'm guessing disassembled is probably the best way of putting it. At some point you figure there's going to be another robot getting a delivery with a cardboard box, and it'll just be, what's in the box?
Yeah.
What's in the box?
Oh, yeah.
And it'll have the binary code for 7 as the title of that movie.
Oh, very clever. Very clever. All right. So this is a weird, weird ending. So
yeah.
It is the night prior to this. So it's what, the end of July, right? Because I think this all went down on August 1st is when we heard
exactly,
about this.
Exactly, yeah.
So July 31st,
mm-hmm.
I think it was a Saturday night, and Hitchbot was in Philadelphia.
Yep.
And
seeing
hanging out,
brotherly love.
Hanging out with a vlogger by the name of Jesse Wellens.
Yep.
And it is well documented what they did in their evening, during their evening, because, you know, Wellens being a YouTube personality, it took him on the town, kind of did a lot of different things with him. There were other people involved. There was another guy, there with them. His name was, Ed Bassmaster,
mm-hmm.
who was another YouTube personality.
Yep.
And, they had kind of a fun evening.
Right? Yeah. The whole idea was that this is it was elevating Hitchbot's profile and elevating the YouTuber's profile. This is a dream come true for a YouTube personality, because it gives you the chance to interact with a meme while it's happening, right? Capitalizing it on afterward. This is like a once in a lifetime type deal.
It can garner you international attention immediately.
Yeah.
It really would, because people were tracking this thing. People were watching exactly where this is, and they knew, you know, when it was in their city, they knew where it was. They could walk. I mean, if it said it's been sitting here at this corner of, Main and Elm Street for the last 20 minutes, you could go down to Main and Elm Street and look at this thing, or pick it up and give it a ride yourself if you wanted to. In fact, the early part of the trip, we didn't talk about this, but it took a long time for it to leave the Boston area. People in Boston were taking it to different parks and different, they're taking it out on boats and things and taking, selfies with it. And it took, I think it was more than 7 days for it to get out of the Boston area.
Which I think the team would have found wonderful, because what was happening was the robot was gathering a series of rich experiences, and the people were gathering the experience of interacting with the robot, which was the purpose for this thing in the first place. So having it take a really long time to get out of any area would not be considered an impediment on the behalf of the people running the project. They, I'm sure, loved it.
Oh yeah, in no way is that a failure. That's a win, as a matter of fact. So, here it is after this fun evening on the 31st, and they place it on a bench, middle of the night. You know, it's late at night, of course, dark. They place it on a park bench, or not a park bench, but a bench on the city street there.
Yep.
And that's it. I mean, you see a cab driver arrive, and that's it. I mean, that's the end of the video interaction with Hitchbot at that point.
Right.
And the next day, we wake up to the news that Hitchbot has been murdered.
Yes. Its head had been removed from its torso and its arms ripped off.
Now, I got to ask you this.
Yeah.
When you saw the photograph of Hitchbot, because now this is a dramatic photograph. I mean, it did look a lot like a true crime scene photo in that, horrific as this may be. I mean, Hitchbot's arms were pulled off and placed above its head, and it was laying in a pile of leaves. It's headless at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, there are real crime scene photos like that. Now,
it was starting to feel like this is the robot equivalent of a serial killer, a crime scene.
So it was laid out in this like this staged manner.
Yeah.
And very, very showy, I guess. And there were actually websites or blogs that would say, I don't really feel comfortable showing you this image, which is weird because here it's just a bucket with a couple of noodle arms and some rubber boots.
Right. If you saw this same collection of stuff in a hardware store, you would just think, oh, somebody just left their random shopping right here.
That's pretty funny. I never thought of it that way. Yeah. It's like, you could gather the stuff up at Walmart and put it on the floor and not think twice about it. But now that we know that this is this thing that they've created that has a name. Now it takes on a different twist, doesn't it? It takes a different feel.
Which again, you might say, while it brings that particular part of the experiment to an end, it also says a lot, right? It also tells you a lot about robot human interactions and where they can go.
It sure does. And right away you would think, well, of course, Wellens and Bassmaster have done this. That's the two people, the two characters that were involved with this last.
Mm-hmm.
And then, lo and behold, 2 days later, whatever, there comes this secret surveillance video that was taken from a nearby store that shows what happened. And someone wanders up in a football jersey and just kicks the living heck out of this thing and destroys it. But it's shown just off screen. We don't actually see the person kicking and destroying this thing. We see him kicking and destroying the area of the bench that Hitchbot was known to be last.
Right. And then later, everyone was reporting that this video was essentially, it itself was staged.
Yeah, it's a fake video because you can go to that scene and look exactly where it was taken from, the same perspective. There's no camera there.
Right.
Yeah, so it's a fake. And so what's going on here? Because they never have found the head of Hitchbot. I mean, they never found the CPU, the thing that would tell them.
The PC.
Yeah, that would tell them what is happening. Like, what happened to it?
Yeah. So the best guess is just that somebody scavenged it. But, in fact, the people behind the scenes, the people behind the project have said, we don't care to identify the person who did it or why they did it. That's not important to what we were trying to do.
With it taking photographs every 20 minutes, I wonder if it captured something and sent it without the person, the perp knowing what had happened.
Right.
Or if it just happened to befall within that time frame between when the photos were taken and didn't capture anything.
Right.
And it's just like everybody else. They don't know anything.
It's possible either way. Of course, there was a huge reaction to this.
Yeah, both ways.
Yeah. Yeah, there were people who were saying, this is awful. This is the worst. It really reflects poorly on the United States that a robot that was capable of safely traveling from one coast of Canada to the other, and also in Germany and also in the Netherlands, gets barely into its journey here in the United States before it's destroyed.
Yeah, that, 7 days.
Yeah, that was a telling condemnation, if you will, of the United States in general and Philadelphia in particular.
Oh, yeah, you can think of all the different comments that were immediately happening afterwards. A lot of people would say, like, well, this happens to real hitchhikers as well.
Right.
It happens to people.
Well, and then there were a ton of comments that said, well, of course this happened in Philadelphia.
Yeah, there's that. And then there's another group of people that would just respond with something like, big deal. It was a bucket of bolts anyways.
Yeah.
It was a machine. Who cares?
Yeah. And I mean, it's again, this ties right back into that robotic human interactions. You might think the experiment's over. I would argue that the team probably says, no, it's still going. It doesn't matter if the robot is gone. The continuing conversation around this is still informing us and still giving us a lot more data about how humans view robots, how we can identify with them, we can imprint an emotional response to them. And in fact, they have tweeted out, continuing to tweet out with the robot, saying the robot still loves people, still loved its adventures. which I think needles it even more, right? You've made the robot this innocent creature. It reminds me a lot of when the various Mars rovers, when they were, like the Phoenix lander specifically, when it was nearing the end of its mission, like it had gone well beyond what the mission parameters were. And it was to a point where it was no longer going to get enough sunlight to recharge its batteries. And it's essentially the social media team at NASA sent out a final tweet from the robot. Keeping in mind, the robot was never tweeting directly. It was always a human being taking data from the robot and then messaging it out.
Of course.
But people identified with that robot. Ooh. And when that last tweet came out, people cried.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? Now they're watching this thing and they're thinking, they're almost making it into like it's like you're watching a dog or something like that. That's dying. That thing right there is dying, and I'm watching it happen.
Right.
And they're not understanding that it's like, now I know it's way more complex than this, but it's not like, well, it's time to get a new toaster.
Right.
You know, it's not like a machine that you don't really have any kind of personal
attachment to.
Yeah, attachment.
Like if my microwave were to malfunction, I'd think, oh, what a pain in the butt. I have to go and get a new one.
Yeah, but you're not going to cry.
No. But and again, that goes right back into that idea of how do robots and humans interact. And we do need to think about this, because if we enter into a world where we start treating these relationships as really casual, when stuff happens and people go through an actual grieving experience, we won't be ready for it. But if we know ahead of time, we can say, all right, you know what? We know this about ourselves. This is something that is innately human, at least for many people.
You realize you're okay with that.
Yeah. And then you think, all right, now I can design a product and market a product and do it in a responsible way that doesn't say this is a weird, you know, aberration or anything. No, this is a very human kind of trait that a lot of people have.
Sure, whatever elicits that response from the humans, that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, and so, or at least that you account for it, even if that's not the purpose of whatever it is you're making, that you at least account for the fact that it exists.
I got it.
We've got a little bit more to chat about when it comes to Hitchbot and to really kind of delve into the psychology behind humans and robot relations. And we'll get right to that in just a second. But first, let's take another quick break to thank our sponsor.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI. And Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
In the fallout of all of this, we've seen not just the condemnation of an act of violence against what seemed to be an innocent creature that loved adventure and meeting people, or as Smith had called it, a story collecting and story generating machine, like that was its purpose. Mm-hmm. We've also seen people come together to say, we can't let this be the end of the story. There are a couple different groups in Philadelphia that had said, let us build a robot to continue on in the spirit of Hitchbot, because I can't stand for Hitchbot's story to have ended in the city that I call home.
Sure, let's have a chance to make this right.
Yeah.
And we're going to do it.
Yeah, so there are the tech community in Philadelphia has responded with this and actually received some more or less tentative thumbs up from some of the members of the Hitchbot team to give this a go. And so there's a group that gathered at the Hactory.
The Hactory?
Yeah, it's like a factory.
Really?
Hactory in West Philadelphia.
Hmm.
This is very recent when this happened. And they have come up with an idea that they're calling the Philly Love Bot. Which,
oh, I don't like the sound of that.
Yeah. An odd choice for a name.
Wait.
But it's in the brotherly love.
Okay, I don't want to take this in the wrong direction or anything, yeah. But
we're not talking about a sex bot.
Okay, okay.
Not a sex bot.
I didn't want to just come right out and say it, but no. It seems like I've heard of products like this.
Yeah, no,
okay.
not that kind of love bot.
Oh, good.
This is more of a love for all mankind and robots
What kind of podcast have I wandered into
here? Yeah, no, I'm not going to do another bait and switch on you, Scott. I already promised you I wasn't going to do
that.
Is that
your real intent here?
No, not doing it this time, honest.
Okay.
So they said that the idea they have is they would build a robot that was designed to be passed from one person to another. So it's not designed to hitchhike from one location to another location. There's no location requirement, at least in their initial approach.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, what they want is to design a robot that when you take possession of it, when someone gives it to you, you are tasked with performing a good deed, however you define it. And it gets documented by the robot itself, the robot you take along with you to do whatever this good deed may be.
Interesting idea.
And then you pass it on. It's like a pay it forward. You pass the robot on to someone else, and it is their duty now to go out and do a good deed. And the idea to kind of atone for the horrible murder of Hitchbot by promoting good deeds, and the robot is the kind of the almost like a totem for that.
I was going to say I like this idea, but you could do the same thing with a carved stick.
Oh, yeah.
You could hand a carved stick to somebody and
absolutely.
Say, now that you're in possession of this stick, it's your duty to do a good deed and pass the stick on to somebody else. It doesn't have to be something that collects and gathers the information, but I guess that keeps everybody kind of honest, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, and I think also, you know, they also are planning on having the robot, which I am going to guess is going to be another computer and not so much a robot. They're going to have it capable of interacting with you just as the Hitchbot could. So in other words, there will still be that robot-human interaction element that will play a part in this experiment.
Mm-hmm.
But the nature of the overall experiment, the perceived purpose will be different.
Now, isn't this funny? Because I wonder what some people are going to consider a good deed, too. Because there might be some comical examples of what people consider to be their good deed for humanity.
Like one, I imagine we would see everything from someone saying, all right, I'm going to take this robot with me while me and my company, while we go out and we clean up a neighborhood.
Sure.
Like that could be one. Or it could be, I'm going to set this robot here on the corner so it can watch me as I stop traffic so this mama duck and her baby ducks can get across the street. It could be anything.
Yeah. Like, oh man, you almost spilled your beer, but I saved you. I'm passing this thing on.
And see that also
again, because of you, if you look at it as the, as an experiment, that's still meaningful data, right?
That's true.
It's interesting. You know, it's kind of like a joke, but it's also, that's humanity too.
That's true. And that's exactly what the initial goal of this whole thing was. I mean, it's to see what happens. It wasn't the goal of getting this thing across Canada, because they could put it in a box and ship it if they wanted
to.
Or just have a trucking company haul it, like we said, you know, one shot all the way straight across. But the idea was to see what happens along the way. It's like the journey is better than the destination.
Exactly. Yeah. And that it's those experiences that were important, and that documenting culture. And we're talking about an emerging culture now, not just tradition, not just the embedded culture that's been around for generations. We're talking about an emerging culture of technology and our daily lives intermingling on a level that has been, it's unprecedented.
Mm-hmm.
We've never seen it like that, and it grows every day. So fascinating, really, a fascinating experiment. I wouldn't call it a failure at all. I mean, I'm sad that the Hitchbot didn't get further along in its journey so that more people could experience it and that we could have more stories. But it's all right, because the story continues. It's just the Hitchbot chapter is over.
Sure.
So when you look at it that way, it's actually really interesting and inspiring. And, you know, of course you might say, well, I hope that the next robot meets with more success and doesn't have the same kind of encounter. But if we do see these kind of encounters happen again and again, then we have new questions to ask, like, why is this happening? You know, what are the motivations behind it? Are there things we need to look at as a society? Not because we want to protect robots, but are there underlying issues that this is just an indicator of it, and maybe there are things we need to fix?
Yeah, some real anger, some deep-seated anger against robots.
or even just one of those situations where clearly the person who was trying to scavenge it wanted to get it for the parts to sell for some reason.
Possibly.
And then that's, well, if that's in fact the answer, then you might say, all right, you know, this is yet another indicator that there are conditions that maybe we should look at and really talk about. And yes, this is a kind of trivial way of highlighting that. And it's stuff that we already know, but it's another way to say, think about this. I mean, we're really talking about compassion and on a level that is a very, you know, human trait, a very innate trait in us. Maybe we should apply that to our fellow humans too, not just to the robots.
Sure.
Even the humans that cause damage to the robots, we should show compassion to, because we don't know the reason behind it. And there may be reasons that we can't even identify with because we're not in that situation. And that's all the more reason to show compassion.
Yeah, and that's exactly what they're, again, I keep going back to this, but that's exactly what they were looking for when they started this whole experiment a couple of years ago.
Yeah, so this has really been fascinating, and I can't wait to see what the next phase will bring to us.
Can I ask you one question
before
we leave here? And
I think we
had discussed this, but only briefly, and we didn't really get into much detail, but had you not known about Hitchbot,
right?
Had you never heard of this whole thing,
exactly?
And you passed it on the city street,
sure.
Driving,
yep.
Would you have stopped to pick it up?
Not a chance at all that I would stop, because, and you made me think about this, because I was coming to it from the perspective of knowing about Hitchbot. If I saw Hitchbot, I'd think, "Holy crap! There's the hitchhiking robot. We've got to take part in this. This is something special."
And I feel the exact same way, but not knowing about Hitchbot.
Not knowing about it and seeing a bucket that has electronics attached to it, even with the happy face, maybe particularly with the happy face, I might think, this is like a suspicious device of some sort.
Yeah, I said it looks an awful lot like an IED.
Yeah.
And I thought, it's not too far off in the description. I know that they're a little more, camouflaged in the way that they typically do those things. But this just seems to me like, not a good idea to pick something up like, you know, something like this up on the street and, you know, strap it in the car next to your kids.
Yeah.
Not really. But I mean, knowing what it is, yeah, of course you'd want to do that. You'd want to, you know, it'd be a great experience for you and your family, you know, to do something with this. Even if you drive it a mile or 5 miles or whatever, just take a quick photograph with it and say you were part of that journey. That's kind of cool.
It's actually kind of interesting to me that Hitchbot spent 7 days in Boston, because Boston is also where
we had the Aqua Teen Hunger Force Moonanite bomb scare.
Oh, that's right.
It was in 2007, and it was in Boston.
I forgot it was in Boston.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's with the neon, or not neon, I'm sorry, LED.
Yeah.
You could tell them what it was.
Yeah, but, the LED, there were these two characters from Aqua Teen Hunger Force, these two Moonanites from the moon. They look like, eight-bit characters from a really crappy video game. They're specifically made to look like that.
Yes.
They're two-dimensional. When they turn sideways, you don't see them anymore because they're gone.
And also, they're hilarious.
They are hilarious. They are incredibly inappropriate, as is everything on Aqua Teen Hunger Force, but they are hilarious. And there was a publicity stunt where these LED signs of the two characters were put up in various locations. And in Boston, it caused a bomb scare. People thought that maybe it was the indication of an explosive device nearby. And so they were dismantled, and it very quickly became kind of a joke slash a discussion about, you have to be very careful in the way you present these kind of guerrilla marketing attempts, because in a post 9/11 world, they can be misinterpreted.
That was post 9/11 and pre marathon bombing too.
Yeah.
So it was kind of in between, but they were on high alert there for a while about these signs. And then, you know, sheepishly, Cartoon Network had to say, oh, that was us.
Yeah.
And here's what happened. But
in fact, they were a little reluctant to say that was us for a while.
Yeah. But you know, then again, bad press is still press.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true. So I'm actually amazed that that Hitchbot didn't meet with any hitches in Boston.
Yeah.
Based on that, when you asked that question and you gave the qualifier, hey, you've never heard of Hitchbot and you see this thing on the side of the road, I definitely would have wondered what the heck it was, and I probably would have thought, I might not want to get too close to that just in case.
Yeah, sure. And imagine if you were, somewhere in Canada, you know, where it's wide open, you know, farmland, and, you know, it's a mile between houses.
Yeah.
And this thing is propped up on its legs and its tripod seat there.
Yeah.
Out in the middle of nowhere. I don't think I'd stop and pick that thing up.
In that case, I probably would stop, only because I would think, who the heck would set up something sinister in the middle of nowhere where you are not likely to affect much of anything at all?
And that's how they get you.
Whereas I would be more concerned about the city location where the opportunity is higher.
I see. Yep. I just see it as like, and that was the last thing that he thought.
Well, I already told you that I was worried that my obituary from yesterday was going to say choked to death on Twizzlers.
It's actually much worse.
Yeah. No, especially since I hate Twizzlers. All right. Well, at any rate, this was really a lot of fun to talk about, and it was fun to kind of, you know, think about the weird adventures, which are all, like I said, documented. You can go to the Hitchbot website and read up on the different days and events and things that it encountered and the people it met.
Yeah, so many successful journeys and so many events and things that had happened. And it posted about all that stuff. And all those interactions are recorded in some way.
Which is great. So you can actually go back and relive those journeys. And I do hope that we see some further experiments that are in the same spirit, whether or not it's another hitchhiking thing or it's like the Philly Love Bot or something. I know
it's like
name.
It's like I'm 10 years old. You can't say that, and I still giggle every time. But you know, I see what you mean. I anticipate a bunch of copycat hitchbots popping up. Here's another little thing that we didn't get to really talk about this, but I think the very next thing we're going to see out of this, unfortunately. And this is just my gut feeling. You said somebody probably scrapped the head, the control unit. I have a feeling we're going to see a photograph of that show up somewhere that's going to be sent to the creators of a Hitchbot.
Which, to the creators, probably would just be yet another data point.
Probably, yeah. But I see it as going like the way a real crime against a human would have gone.
Yeah.
You know, and the there'll be a taunting note sent to them as well.
Which, you know,
I hope I'm wrong.
That if that does happen, though, it is interesting because it suggests that whoever does it obviously would think of it as, or at least I would guess, this is armchair psychology, but I would imagine that they would think of it as like a joke that, you know, I'm treating this as if it were a real person.
Meanwhile, there are other people who think that's sick because they do think of Hitchbot as at least some, well, in some way, similar to a person. And this is, again, just part of the fascinating discussion.
So that we're clear here, I read a lot of true crime. So it's not that I'm just thinking about this all the time. I mean, I'm just saying around the 1 year anniversary, just pay attention to what's right. going on in the news. It might happen, might not happen. I don't have any inside info or anything like that.
Yeah, but it could just as easily be that someone saw it and thought, oh, I want a tablet PC.
Could be, and it could have ended up in a dumpster or half a block away.
Yeah.
You know,
it's hard to say.
Mm-hmm.
But this was a lot of fun, Scott. Thank you for coming on the show.
Well, thank you again. I appreciate it. And likewise, I had a good time doing it.
Fantastic. If you guys want to listen to more amazing content that Scott and Ben generate all the time, you got to check out Car Stuff. It's a great show.
Oh, shucks.
It's tons of fun. I've had so much fun listening to those episodes.
I thought you were going to say those clowns. Right there. You said, I've had so much fun listening to, and there's a little pause, and I thought you were going to say those clowns.
Well, that's true outside of the room, right? Like in the studio, or in the office, rather.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so, guys, if you have any suggestions for future topics, or you have, you know, your own perspective on Hitchbot and what that experiment was all about, let me know. Send me an email. The address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com. Or you can drop me a line on Facebook or Twitter. The handle at both of those is techstuffhsw. And I'll talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.